Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It was a great game last night. Am I talking about the Diamondbacks or am I talking about Duke? Well, actually, both. Alex Rodriguez was cheered yesterday. I mean, cheered. Tiger Woods is meeting with the media right now in Augusta. Kevin Johnson was passed over again for the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame and is not going to make it. It was his final time to try to get in. There's a lot on my mind today. A lot going on in the world of sports. Adrian Peterson is meeting with Roger Goodell, but he did speak earlier today about his situation and wanting a fresh start. So there's plenty to get to. And we'll sprinkle some guests in today. Jody Jackson, who I think is, I saw Jody in action yesterday. You guys see Jody in action before games, during games, and all that stuff, pre-games. You don't see the blood and guts of walking into a clubhouse and seamlessly going over to this Diamondback player, that Diamondback player with a photographer when there's nobody around and it's not on. Everybody likes to see the finished product. I kind of like to see the blood and guts of the deal. It's just how I am in this business. You can see people that really work and you can see people that are just there on scholarship. She clearly isn't. And I admire her work ethic. And I want to talk to her about last night with the Diamondbacks on opening night. Jack Murphy, we've not talked to Jack. And I wanted to have Jack on today about the Final Four weekend, the refereeing and all that stuff. But, you know, to take a couple minutes and just say the last team standing west of the Mississippi in this year's March Madness in the CIT was Northern Arizona University. He's not going to be there long. I don't mean that any disrespect to NAU, but somebody, and it may even be this hiring cycle. So I'm going to talk to Jack Murphy about a bunch of stuff, including the refereeing last night, because that's all people are whining about. I don't know, you're in the middle of your day now. And the news cycle this morning was about a missed call off of a fingernail, and then Bo Ryan having a moment that I'm sure he's going to regret as a coach after the game. Many times now we're analyzing what happens after the game is over. You know, how they handle themselves in a press conference, what they say in a press conference, and it's fine. I try to focus on what happens between the lines. It's all part of the deal. We have plenty of content on our website, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I just put up a story, Charles Barkley, who was with us earlier on the show, talking about Tiger Woods and when does a great athlete know that it's time to be done? And there's some audio with Charles with me earlier on the show and some written form, too, you can check out, again, at sports360az.com. Let's get you caught up. Some things on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. So, summer's right around the corner. I know the Arizona State Sun Devil White Mountain Steak Fry is coming up. A lot of people are going to stay at the Honda Resort and Casino for that event. I was with some big cigars this last week, ASU Cigars, that are going to be up there for that event. They look forward to staying at the Honda Resort and Casino. Why? Because you can have great food, you have great fun, you can pull down on the slots and win, great entertainment, and enjoy the White Mountains. Have you not been to the White Mountains before? You've never checked it out? The Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top, northeastern part of Arizona. It's a beautiful part of the country. Why not check it out for yourself at the Honda Resort and Casino? Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. Eric, where do you want me to start here today? I'm thinking Bo Ryan whining is what everybody's going off on.
Yeah, which is a shame because it was a great game last night. And like you said, there's more buzz about what happened in the post game than what happened actually in the game. And I was riveted. I put it on Twitter last night. I could give two poops about Duke or Wisconsin.
Or even one.
I mean, I grew up, my grandparents lived in North Carolina, Chapel Hill, so obviously I like the Tar Heels.
Yeah.
And I live in Pac-12 country, so why would I have any interest in the Big Ten having success? So, and I was riveted to the game. I couldn't get enough of it. I loved it. It was great basketball.
So there's a lot to take in from last night. You know, Bo Ryan after the game. So Wisconsin loses, and they lose in a fashion that I thought they had control of the game, and I thought that Kaminsky ran out of gas. He played 39 minutes. He did the best that he could, but there should have been a spot or two along the way. Coach K found a way with his guys in foul trouble to navigate through. Wisconsin kept their big horse out on the floor, and I just thought he was out of gas. The officiating was part of the conversation after the game. During the game, though, I love watching Kaminsky. Kaminsky gets the ball inside, and it's just exciting stuff that happens with him.
Kaminsky driving in, and a foul is called as well. When you can shoot the basketball, you own people. The big fella with the blow-by, and how about the hesitation in the air to draw the contact?
Okay, again, why CBS waited 30-plus years to put Bill Raftery in the championship game chair as an analyst just tells you that a lot of people that are in the broadcasting industry don't know what they're doing. That's all. You could have the pure, straight X and O guys as we've had through the years. Bill Raftery was a rock star last night. He made me laugh. He made me think. He knew the game. He anticipated. He was terrific as part of the broadcast. Kaminsky, his footwork, you know, when Okafor, I told my 10-year-old, watch this guy from Duke and his footwork. My kid's going to be a big kid. I don't know if he's going to be 6'11". I'm 6'8". He's going to get past me. And I don't know if he's going to play the game or not, but, you know, as a dad, you want your kids to have good players to watch. I believe in role modeling on the court, on the field. I don't want my kid to be role modeling any of these guys off the court. His role model should be me. So Kaminsky was terrific. But the story of this game, to me, was the guard play of Duke. Grayson Allen. Grayson, if you had Grayson Allen as a star, you win. Nobody did.
Allen on a fifth-year senior. Driving in on him. Putting it up.
Tough shot.
And it drops again.
Great offense always trumps great defense. Allen is feeling it here in the second half. Huge spark off the bench for the Devils.
And then what I notice about Wisconsin is their defense. They don't. On the high screen and roll, they played soft, meaning they didn't go through the screen. They went under. If you go under. And Tyus Jones just killed him. I don't know what Wisconsin was thinking because they continued to play a soft defense.
Tyus Jones launches the three. Oh, this kid is on his way if they win it to MOP, if they win it.
Undutes by the little guy.
Woo. That's just great. If you've never watched Bill Raftery, you're like, he's talking about onions. What is that?
And it was almost like Nance got the call out of the way as quickly as possible.
Sure.
So we could get more Bill Raftery, which
sure.
is good.
Which is good. More Bill. Krzyzewski showed, in my view, why he is at the top of the coaching pile with John Wooden right there alongside of him. Just not numbers, but he had his two best players in foul trouble and managed to navigate through the game. He managed to have players rise up. They got better defensively as the tournament went along, from my view. And here's Coach K on the execution for Duke late in the game.
Our defense down the stretch was magnificent. We were fabulous down the stretch. I mean, I don't know how you can be any better than we were down the stretch, except Tyus going in for that layup when he should have taken it to the side, and I wanted to break his neck.
So the way that they went about their business last night was great. Now, Wisconsin, on the other hand, you can't blame the refs for everything. There's a call. We all saw the call in question. Ball going off the fingertip of Winslow. And I saw a first replay I couldn't see. Jim Nance couldn't see. Bill Raftery couldn't see. Reggie Miller couldn't see. Then I went to a second replay, and a third, and a fourth, and a fifth, and finally around the seventh replay, oh yeah, there it is, you can see it. Now, the head of officials for the NCAA was saying this morning that what we see in television, referees don't have that same feed, okay? I actually had coffee this morning with a college referee, and we were talking about this, that when you're in that space, depending on the conference, you could go to some places where they just have one little screen and one camera, and that's it. That's all you're stuck with. So there's no uniformity across the board. Very easy, if you're a Wisconsin fan, to say, oh, these refs stink, they're this or that. Krzyzewski worked the refs over his halftime going in when he said to Tracy Wolfson, and I'm paraphrasing, essentially, Wisconsin is getting the fouls called on us, and the refs are calling the fouls on us. We have to find a way to do the same for them. Wasn't Krzyzewski being critical? So what happened in the second half? Duke went to the basket. Duke kept going to the basket. I mean, I think Grayson Allen heard the message of let's go to the basket. And good things happened. Were the refs bad? I don't want to get wound up and make that the focal point. Clearly, it is a story today. It was a great, great title game. I get the frustration. I don't understand Bo Ryan. Here's Bo Ryan on the officiating in last night's game.
You just have to be able to handle all the hands and the checking. I mean, all the body contact, there was more body contact in this game than any game we played all year. And I just feel sorry for my guys that all of a sudden a game was like that, you know. And I think they're struggling with that a little bit. So we missed some opportunities. They hit some tough shots. It's just a shame that it had to be played that way.
Okay, that's whining.
Yeah, just stop.
That's whining.
It's
very easy.
Stop.
You and I were talking yesterday about how enjoyable it was to watch Wisconsin. It was like a talent show. It was like a variety show. They were funny. They were this, they were that, and they were also winning. So when you lose, and that's how you handle losing, this was not Bo Ryan's finest hour. It wasn't. Is this something that Bo Ryan will regret forever? I don't know. If I'm in a space where I just lost a national title game, and my team gave everything that they had, and we were punished and pushed around in the court, I could probably see Bo Ryan's argument. It is easy for you and I to sit here behind microphones today and say, you know, shut up and just stop. That's what I'm going to say. I'm not in his shoes. I'm not a Wisconsin fan. I'm not a Duke fan.
But you have to adjust. It's
you
just,
have
it's
to
just
adjust.
Like an,
right.
Every umpire right. calls a baseball game a little bit different.
Yes.
You just have to adjust the way the game is being called.
Duke adjusted. Okay. This is the comment that you're about to hear that has Bo Ryan, everybody just crushing him today. Here's Bo Ryan on We Do It the Right Way at Wisconsin.
Every player that's played through the program, okay, we don't do a rent a player, try to take a fifth year guy or whatever, and that's okay. If other people do that, that's great. I like trying to build from within. It's just the way I am.
Okay, there's no reason to say that. There's just none.
Yeah, it was pretty classless. I mean, you're just dragging the game of basketball through the mud.
So if Jahlil Okafor comes to you and says, hey, I want to play for you, you're going to say, no, we do it the right way here. We want you to be here the whole time. That's just how it is. We don't want if Marvin Bagley has an interest in going to Wisconsin, well, we're not going to recruit you. What, are you kidding me? We don't want any part of that. Come on.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last night. I mean, that's when everything's going well, Bo Ryan is Mr. Engaging, funny, witty, sharp humored, and then last night we saw sort of the ugly side of what happens when a coach gets frustrated with a loss.
Adrian Peterson is meeting with Roger Goodell, but he did speak to a reporter earlier today, and I'll give you some of those comments a little bit later on in the show. Tiger Woods, we have a problem with the show on Thursday, Eric. Are you aware Tiger's tee time came out? 10:48 Arizona time.
How many TVs are you staring
it's like
at right now?
Right in the middle of the
One,
show.
Two, you have five TVs.
I'm
in the
rooting
studio.
For him. I am rooting for him this week.
You're the one, huh?
No, okay. Hey, get out of here. So Alex Rodriguez gets roundly cheered yesterday. Roundly cheered. He's a cheat, and they're cheering for him. Tiger Woods, you don't want Tiger to do well? You want me to sit and watch? I don't know. I could throw some names, but I don't want to demean those guys. I want Tiger's compelling.
Either way, he's compelling if he wins, and he's compelling
no.
if he doesn't play well.
Saturday afternoon, I am laid out. Saturday and Sunday, I'm on the couch. Okay, I'm done. I'm doing nothing this weekend. Jody Jackson is next, Fox Sports Arizona. I didn't even get into the Suns, but it was a very short subject, so I'm not even going to go there. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has a press conference today with Sean Miller, too. We'll get to that as the show moves on.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.
One of the highlights yesterday of opening day was being down in the guts of the ballpark very early. And I noticed that the Diamondbacks went out of their way to make a locker for Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona reporter and pre- and post-game show host and a person of many, many talents. What is the deal with this locker of yours? What is the story with that?
Oh, well, there's a story. It's actually funny. Okay, so for many years, it actually had Todd Walsh's name on it. And, you know, I just carry around a lot of clothes, sometimes have to change, whatnot. So I, you know, and it's always been offered to me as well. And I just, you know, and I happened to need it the other day. And so I said, you know, can you open it for me? And they opened it. I think that Todd has the key, I believe, but I'm not sure if the key works. It's kind of a long story, but
no, it's fine.
Anyway, they put my name up on it. Like, I was like, wow. Like, and then they did it in like 10 minutes of me asking about it. So now everyone's making a big deal about this locker and it's like 40 degrees in there. So
it, does it have a nameplate inside there with like a real locker for you?
No,
it's not that good.
Does it have, I hate to disappoint everyone. It's really not.
It's a broom closet, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a nice little space, but yeah, it's like a restroom and a closet. Like, not a closet, but like a, you know, a rod to hang your clothes on.
Yeah. You have probably been that reporter that has had to change within the vehicle, right? You've had to do that?
Wait, Brad, hang on. I lost you there. Hang on a minute.
Are you there, Jody?
Yeah, I'm here. All right.
No. You're that reporter that you're so busy because you're doing so many different things over at Fox Sports Arizona. You've had to do the quick change in the car before, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah, I have.
Of course. And you've probably had to do it within...
Doesn't everyone do that? Probably not.
No, but within the parking garage at the ballpark or something along those lines, you've been in... People who don't think that happens, doesn't matter if it's guys or girls, that happens in our business. When we're on the run, going, and we're trying to balance kids, and we're trying to balance family, and we got to do a show, and you've had to do that, I'm sure, many times. So this is a big step forward for you.
Yeah, it's nice to have a little space, you know, and I mean, again, I still need to get a key. I guess Todd does too, so I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, you guys
figure that all out at some point.
All right. I don't want to start the gossip rumor here, so I'll just go off that subject. It's just very, very nice to have that. I have to say, I was watching you go do your paces yesterday when the locker room opened, and I was ranting about you earlier. You work your tail off, and people know that. They see you all done up, doing your thing before games, after games, and looking great. What they don't see is
Thanks, Brad. No, but seriously,
they don't see you bouncing from player to player in the locker room, getting your interviews, getting content, and just getting after it. And I have to wonder, the hockey team, I'm going to be very blunt with you. If you didn't know, they weren't very good this year. And
you can be blunt. It's okay. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah. And the baseball team, I picked them to win 84 games, and Pedro Gomez says, I've lost my mind. And he's still going to come on with me every week to talk about it. But nonetheless, it's a team that's a work in progress. How do you get yourself wrapped around a baseball team that is picked by many to win like 65, 75 games and have that same enthusiasm on opening day?
That's not hard to do, actually. I mean, it's just, as you know, I mean, there's so many stories. I think the bigger key is, you know, you start the season, there's so many things to kind of dive into. So, you know, if you ask me in September, and if it's like last September, yeah, it's a little bit hard sometimes. You've exhausted a lot of storylines, but
or the September before that, or the September before that, or the September before that. Yeah, no, I got you.
Well, yeah, since 2011, obviously.
Right.
But you know, and even then, I mean, and you and I have talked about this before. I mean, and I think sometimes you don't believe me when I say this, but like, you know, there's still so many interesting things, like when guys get called up and. You know, Jake Lamb last year when he got called up, I mean, he kind of struggled early on. And then, you know, just kind of watching him. And then last night could be, you know, hopefully that's a sign of things to come for him.
Who's your favorite story right now on this team?
Wow, that's a good question.
Well.
Kind of got to let it develop.
No, I mean, you're sitting here. Is it La Russa? I mean, is it Chip Hale? Is it one of these kids? Is it Archie who's throwing Saturday? I don't know. I'm from your view.
Excuse me. Well, it certainly could be Archie. We don't know. It could be Ruby De La Rosa who's going to pitch tonight. I think that, you know, a guy that I think a lot of us root for is Tuffy. You know, just see how he does as a starting catcher. I think the thing about what he does, though, it'll go under the radar. I mean, you know, he had a single last night. He's not a guy that's going to hit home runs or, you know, just what he does kind of is just solid under the radar. But I think Jake Lamb could be a big story. I think, you know, like, again, Archie, Ruby,
How do you
kind of early to tell, but Daniel Hudson, his role and might evolve, you know, it's kind of cool seeing everyone cheer him. And there's some good stories on this team. And then Goldie just kind of, you know, again, he kind of almost is under the radar because people come to expect so much from him. I think Mark Trumbo could have a big year. I think, though, you know, starting pitching is all of it for me, Brad. Like, that's the biggest key for this team. I just think if their starting pitching is pretty good, and obviously it wasn't last night, you know, if they can hold it together. It was awful last year in the month of April, and we really thought that they had a good starting group. And, you know, now that's going to be, what determines how they end up doing this year is how they pitch in, you know, April and May and see if they can remain in contention.
Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona Diamondbacks pre-post game show host for a couple of minutes. How do you handle a situation like Aaron Hill from your view?
Well, I talked to Aaron yesterday. He probably saw me over there.
Yeah.
And by the way, real quick on gathering all the information, you know, you gather all the stuff, and what's amazing is why you gather so many things is because it may or may not fit into the game. And you actually need, you know, if you think you need five things, you really need like 20.
No, that's right.
Because you
that's
just right. don't know. I mean, you know, and then you don't know who's going to pitch later in the game, and just all these little things you write down and you try to. But Aaron Hill was, you know, I hadn't talked to him, and he. You know what? He would love to, of course, be a regular everyday guy. He doesn't like not playing, but I kind of joked with him. I said, you know, they're turning the ball club over to the youth. You know, he's not that old. I believe he's 32, but, you know, compared to guys that you need to see what they have and they're 23, 24 years old, it is, you know, he is at this point kind of the aging ball player, but, you know, I think he's handling it really well. And I think that, he won't, you know, obviously doesn't look like he's going to play a ton, but, you know, maybe he'll be able to have a role off the bench and be a good pinch hitter. I think if another team does want him down the line, I mean, he'll end up somewhere else. But, right now he talked to me about Chris Owings and how those two guys are kind of cut from the same cloth. They mm-hmm. just work and they kind of keep their nose down and to the grindstone. And they, you know, he really likes Chris a lot. So obviously, there's no animosity there, and he's helped him, you know, because Aaron's played that position so long, and Chris is sort of new to it. So he's doing the right thing, and I knew that he would. Just he's a good person, and you kind of knew he would handle it okay.
It's early in dealing with Chip Hale, and I saw you had his wife last night, and it was a really good segment that you had. I'm just curious of the managers that you've covered on the baseball front. Chip to me seems to be. Bob Melvin was a terrific and a very good friend of mine, Bob Melvin. But Bob Melvin was not the most gregarious, outgoing, effervescent compared to Chip Hale. Chip's like six cups of coffee at 6 in the morning. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah,
I'm just
yeah.
wondering how you found him so far, if you could give the fan, the listener, kind of the idea of what Chip Hale is all about.
Yeah, he has all that energy, but, you know, it's not so much that it's like distracting that he can't sit and talk with people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, there's that person that's, like, so energetic that they're almost like you can't have a normal conversation with them, and that's not what Chip is. So that's great. You know, he's been good with the media so far. Just kind of, it's funny, like, he would say things in spring, and everyone's digging for info, and he would say, well, this is like this, but don't write it like that, because, you know, I meant it this way. And so, you know, I think he's well-prepared for the job. I mean, last night, you know, for example, inserting Lamb, he basically emptied his left-handers on the bench. He yeah. mentioned, you know, that Chafin, though, being in there, you know, Crawford hits lefties well. I don't know if he wishes he had done that differently, but at that point you're looking for Chafin to go and face a number of batters. It wasn't, you know, matchup. You know, he was your guy that's coming in to bridge that gap with Cole Mentor going out early, so... I think he's very smart. I think he's very prepared. He's been in this business a long time, 50 years old, and which is, you know, depending on how, you know, some managers are younger, some are older, but I think he's right at the prime right now to be able to do this, and he's well prepared for it. And yeah, his wife is amazing. She's been with him all the way through college, you know, watched him go every step of the way, 3 children, a lot of sacrifice. I think he's going to do well. I mean, again, though, it's who's out there playing. And I think, though, from a standpoint of, you know, he's ultra prepared. And I think that, you know, from that respect. I think decision-wise, he'll make many more good ones than bad ones, and I think he's a good choice for this type of team. I mean, I don't know if that's what they took into consideration. I think they liked him for a number of reasons, no matter what kind of team that this was. But with a young team that is going to have maybe some growing pains, I think he's the perfect guy.
Yeah, I think Gibby was worn down himself. He needed to move on for his own personal benefit, and I think Chip is the right face here. How'd you get Tony La Russa to come out to your little league team? So I see your social media stuff and on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff, wherever I saw the pictures of Tony La Russa coming out to your little league. Did the kids know who he was or what he's all about?
Excuse me. The kids, some of them did. Actually, one of the kids is a really big Cardinals fan. His dad has taken him to the World Series and everything, but okay, again, I don't have the power that it appears that I have. Same with the locker.
Right. Sure.
No, here's the story.
All right.
I had nothing to do with it. It was winter meetings. They had an auction through, it's called Longevity, for lung cancer. And apparently one of the D-backs, all the teams had different things up for grabs in this auction. And apparently Tony coming out to a little league team was one of them. And one of our coaches, got that item, like bid on it and got it. So that's how it happened.
She says with a straight face. No, it's I believe
no,
you.
No,
I believe you. I believe
no,
you.
I,
just giving you a hard
totally.
time.
And my son, so that was actually the majors team. My son is on the minors team, and my daughter is playing double A, which is the lowest level. She just turned 7. So, and she had 3 hits last night. I just wanted to mention that real quick.
3 hits while you're at the ballpark.
3 hits and 3 putouts. The putouts were more impressive to me because fielding-wise, as you know, with Little League, you don't know what you're getting. But she apparently ran to the right base. She apparently threw it to the right base. And so anyway, it's a lot of fun. And that was neat. So the majors team, I guess there was one moment, though, that I actually missed till later, someone told me. But the umpires are a lot of times, high school kids. And I guess there was a play at first, and the umpire said, out, and this was Tony's runner, and then I guess Tony made the safe, Tony made the safe sign. The umpire said, okay, safe. So,
that's good.
What Tony says goes on the Little League field, apparently. So.
That's good. 84 wins, am I like way too high and out of the ballpark?
I don't know, Brad, I just want to know your reason. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, but what's
No, you are saying I'm wrong without saying that I'm wrong. Okay, so my rationale is this. How many games combined were Goldschmidt and Trumbo out last season? Plus, how many games were the starting pitching, I understand, in April. I'm of the opinion. Okay, so I believe that there's probably 10 more wins between those two in the lineup. There's a lot more offense. Maybe I'm being optimistic. Maybe I'm not. From the pitching standpoint, I have to believe, Jody, that with the bombs that I've seen the organization put out there in the last few days of, hey, Cody, goodbye, here's a check, see you later. Hey, Trevor, goodbye, we're going to pay part of you to please go to Atlanta, thanks for playing. That this organization isn't going to sit here with the 5 that we're seeing here in April and early May. If they can keep their heads above water, I really believe as the season goes along that they're going to address the starting pitching front. And that these kids will get better. Jake Lamb last night, that was a huge deal what he did, being put in that spot.
So
I can make the argument I see better pitching. I also have to say I thought the organization by about the middle of August last year was just done with Gibby. Okay? The message from the staff was not getting through to that team. They didn't care. So I add that all up, and I don't think the National League West is all that. Otherwise, why is San Diego acquiring $80 million in salary the day before the season opens? Am I right? So put it all together.
No,
that's what I see.
They have to hang together. You're right. That's why April and May are so important. I mean, if you're hanging right there, if you're winning series, if your record is good at the end of May, you could continue it through June. I mean, and maybe the pitching will surprise. I mean, and then Corbin comes back.
See, listen to you. You're talking yourself into this. You're talking yourself into believing me. It's fine.
I've thought through all of this too. I mean, it just has to happen, Brad. It just has to. Can it be executed as such?
Sure.
It can be one pitch. It can be.
No, I know. I got to let you go off that. I've already run a little long. I got to let you go. You know, it's
you're gonna let me go. You're
I got to let you go. I'm running long. I'm dumping you. You know, wrap, as they're saying. So I'll talk to you soon. I appreciate you coming on. Hey, come in here and host this show sometime. Would you do that?
Absolutely, I will do that. E and I are chatting, so we'll figure something out.
All right. There's Jody Jackson. Really admire what she's all about and what she stands for and everything that she does there at Fox Sports Arizona. Good people over there. Jack Murphy's on the other side. NAU head basketball coach back from the Final Four. Really good story there in Flagstaff, but also I want to get his national view, especially with his days under Lute Olson and much more. That's next. So there's been a lot of discussion, and we've had many, many voices, Clark Kellogg, Charles Barkley, and others here in the last week on the tournament. And I didn't want to go down the path of, is college basketball broken, the regular season narrative that I've been reading and hearing about until the tournament was over. Last night, 17.1 national rating, highest rated championship game. What was it, Eric? 20, was it 17 or 20 years, something like that? I saw it.
20 years, I think.
20 highest rated championship game in 20 years. But the point of, is the regular season not resonating with the masses? Well, is it because it's football season? Is it because starting games in November, should you move the calendar to January and have the season wrap up in May? Or are you just beholden to television? How does this all work? I don't know. It's just one of the things I took away from last night and this morning hearing all the conversation, whether it's people ripping on Bo Ryan and how he handled himself, the Coach K, John Wooden comparison. And as you put it all together, I wanted to bring on Jack Murphy, the NAU head basketball coach. They went to the CIT finals against Evansville. They came up just a bit short. He was at the Final Four. The last remaining team west of the Mississippi to play in the month of March and into April was Northern Arizona University. And the coach joins us for a couple of minutes. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for having me on, Brad.
Sure, Jack. No problem. How was the Final Four for you?
The Final Four was great. A lot of energy. Obviously, it was fun to be there after coming off such a successful run for us and our program. And when I walked around with my NAU shirt on, it got recognized a lot more this year than it has the previous 2 years. So that was a little bit exciting.
Did you have any college athletic directors saying, "Hey, we need to talk"?
No ADs wanting to talk, but the NJIT, New Jersey Institute of Technology athletic director, did stop me on the street and told me how impressed he was with our crowd and our atmosphere, which I thought was fun.
That's great. That's great. And I mean that in all respect, because I'm seeing your name all over the place now nationally for the job that you've done, and that's part of the deal. To that end, if you take a snapshot now, you've had some time to think back, where would you put this season? Obviously, being a head coach is one thing versus an assistant, but you've been at the highest of highest as an assistant. Where would you put this season in your coaching career?
I'd put it as pretty high up on the list in terms of being proud of the young men that I was able to be with day in and day out, coaching them, the team, the way that they came together and improved. I thought it was as successful of a season as I've ever been a part of. You have to think about this, and so is this, 8 + 3 + 3, so that's 14. This is my 14th year being involved in college basketball. I spent 3 years in the NBA, so 14 years in college basketball. It's only the second time I've ever been part of a team that played in April, so that's pretty special. You know, the other time was 2001, when we played in the national championship down at Arizona against Duke, and I was a manager. So to play in April, to do things that have never been done in NAU's history before, I mean, you just can't help but look back and think that it was as successful as it could be.
Jack Murphy with us for a couple of minutes. Okay, off the top, I went into this rant about fixing the game, and I'm sure you've heard the narrative. Is the game of college basketball, from your view and your coaching fraternity's view, does the regular season need to be fine-tuned, tweaked, completely changed?
I don't think completely changed. I think that there's certain things in small doses that are fantastic about the college basketball season. You know, you look at the Maui Invitational, what they're doing now down in the Bahamas with the Battle for Atlantis. Some of those events are tied around the Thanksgiving holiday. To me, somebody who's grown up around the game and has a huge love and passion for the game, those holidays wouldn't be the same if it weren't for college basketball. And then when after, you know, as you get in after the college football bowl season and NBA playoffs, what are you going to do on Monday night without some big time matchups in the Big 12 or Big East or, you know, Tuesday night SEC games? I mean, I think that the college basketball season is fantastic. Now, I think that there's some things that we could do with our game in terms of shortening the shot clock. You know, in the CIT, we played with 30-second shot clock. I thought it was great.
It was great. I thought
the pace of play was a little bit faster. Mm-hmm. Evansville, the team that we played in the championship game, they played with a much higher tempo in the postseason because of the 30-second shot clock than they did in the regular season. And as coaches, it, you know, brought some more strategy into the game. I talked to one coach at the Final Four who was in the CIT, and he said it was 37 seconds left in the half. He called timeout thinking, hey, I'm going to get the last shot. And then he looks at the clock. He's like, oh, I totally forgot it's only a 30-second shot clock. You know, mm-hmm. The other team's definitely getting the ball back. So, you know, it changes possession, gets, you know, more possessions in the game. I think players are you know, thinking quicker. They're moving quicker. You have to play with better pace. I definitely think that that could help the game of basketball.
How about the
30 seconds? How about not even shorter?
How about resetting the shot clock off a miss to 12 or 14? Where are you at on that one?
Yeah, I'm fine with that as well too. Yeah, I'm fine with that. You know, we're a team that relied heavily on offensive rebounding. So a lot of times, 70% of the time, when you get an offensive rebound, you're going to go right back up with it anyway, or you're going to kick it back out for an open three. So I don't think there's any reason the shot clock should be reset to all the way to 35 or 30. Same thing with fouls or, you know, out of bounds, kick balls, all that stuff. I mean, you can change, get the pace of play a little bit faster a lot of different ways. And then extending the three-point line out to international, I think that would help too with spacing. I mean, if you watch the Final Four games, the paint was so constricted. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin tried to do it. They tried to spread it out. Duke tries to do it. They try to spread it out. But that three-point line brings everything in so much tighter. I think that could help the game as well.
What did you make out of Bo Ryan after the game? I said it's not his finest hour. I've never been a coach that's lost in a championship game. A cooling-off period is not going to calm it down. But did you see his comments, and what were your thoughts?
You know, I saw his comments this morning on Twitter when I got up. You know, as a coach, obviously, the emotional part of it is it becomes difficult when you feel like you don't have control, or you feel like your players don't have control, and there are three other people on the court that have some say in the outcome of games, and referees and officials, and you know, it's part of the game. A lot of people would say, hey, Bo Ryan has nothing to complain about because Saturday night against Kentucky, you know, they got some friendly whistle.
Yep, yep.
A shot clock violation that wasn't called. At the end of the season, when I look back on it as a coach, I remember every time where I think that we got messed over by a referee. But the honest truth, if I go back and watch everything again, it balances out. I mean, at the end of the year, it balances out. And it's part of the game. You have to play part of the you have to play through that. And I know Coach Ryan would probably say that today, but in that heat of the moment, and you have a chance of a lifetime, and it takes so long and so hard to get to that, to get to the championship game of the Final Four, I don't begrudge him at all. I mean, I just think he's somebody fighting for his kids, and, you know, I know it's after the game, and, you know, people could say crying over spilled milk, but, man, you have no idea how hard it is to get there.
Well, I have to tell you, you were there earlier this year, you know, when you and I talked,
Yeah. You
know, going, an assistant coach running on the floor in the final seconds and nothing is called from it. I mean, that was just crazy to me. I will say this, the tip ball by Winslow, you remember the play I'm talking about last night?
Yes, 100%.
So, yeah. So here's the thing on that. You're sitting watching the game. I'm sitting watching the game in our nice televisions. And it took Raftery and Nance and Grant 5, 6, 7, 8 times till they finally saw it, okay? These referees, you can't blame the referees for everything. They have an impossible job in terms of making the call instantaneously. And so today the narrative is, well, if you have replay, you better make sure you get it right. They don't even have the same feed. The referees didn't have the same television feed that you had or I had. So there's some uniformity issues, I guess, Jack, is what I'm getting at. on the college end of things that you look at and say, is there uniformity throughout every conference, throughout every league, that there is somebody that is a neutral party or a fourth official that is sitting there that handles the replay? So the egos of these three guys, if they screwed up, that they're not going to admit it, have somebody else take it off their hands. I don't know. There's just some ways to go about that play last night. I can't crush those guys over that.
Yeah, and that's something that the general public doesn't understand. They don't have the same feed. And as clear as it was for me sitting at home that it went off of Winslow, you know, they're not getting that same view. And unless you have that view and it can stop right there, you don't understand. You know, you're not going to make a guess off the angles or views that they have. You know, Brad, you bring up a good point. I mean, you would think that once it gets down to the 68 teams in the NCAA tournament and all the money involved, that there could be somebody there helping those three out on the court and saying, hey, look, this is the right call. Here, yeah. I have the TV feed, all that stuff. But like I said, it's part of the game. I mean, Kentucky could be saying, hey, look, it was a shot clock violation against Wisconsin in the semifinals, and that's not reviewable play. So you had some of the best officials in the country reffing those three games in the Final Four. I was at the two games Saturday, and for the second half, Kentucky-Wisconsin, I had a much better seat than I had before. I kind of snuck down.
Wow, listen to you.
And I thought those three refs did a really good job, you know, reffing the game, handling the game. And, you know, we've had those same referees do some NAU games over my time here. And, you know, they're the best in the business. So at that point, you just have to go with what they call and play through it. And may the best team win. And Duke made the best the plays at the end of the game last night to win the game. I mean, they just did. They outscored them 29-14 or something like that in the last 9 or 10 minutes. I mean, they deserve to win the championship.
Talking with Jack Murphy, before I let you go, so you have some kids coming in from Florida that you'd mentioned when we were up there. Your schedule for next year, non-conference-wise, are you having opponents of a national level want to schedule you? I know you've had some of that. Are you seeing more of that now?
I think to a certain degree we are, just because our RPI was a lot better this year. We finished with the top 150 RPI, which is great, and that helps in scheduling. Nobody wants to play the lower 300 RPI teams because it comes up on Selection Sunday. But this next year, you know, we're excited. We're going to play down at U of A again, down in Tucson, and we have Gonzaga on the schedule, which obviously will be a great challenge. So, you know, it's great for us recruiting wise to play teams of that caliber, get the kids out, you know, so they can see different levels. And I truly believe our non-conference schedule this year, as difficult as it was, it helped us throughout the year, and we got better because of it.
No question. I'll let you go off that. Appreciate the time and insight. Stay well.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brad. Really appreciate it.
See ya. Bye. Jack Murphy, NAU head basketball coach, for a couple of minutes. As we like to say with guys like Miles Simon and Brock Huard back in the day when they first come on, a riser, somebody that in the position that they're in is just going to keep blasting off. And that's Jack. I mean, he's doing a terrific job at Northern Arizona University. And I really enjoy talking basketball with him. So on the other side, Adrian Peterson met with a reporter this morning before his Roger Goodell meeting, and he said some things that are very interesting. I'll get to that in a minute. Tiger just met with the media. He's 15 over par. He's only played 47 tournament holes, and I'm rooting for him, and Eric's like crushing me on this. I don't know what his problem is. What did Tiger ever do to you? Rondae Hollis-Jefferson has a press conference today at 4. We'll talk about that and much more as we continue on. Kind of getting done on the Adrian Peterson story. I want to get it over with. I want to get it behind. But the Cardinals clearly are in play on this. So I have to bring this up. Adrian Peterson is meeting with Roger Goodell today. Okay, we knew that it was coming at some point. He is meeting in New York to seek reinstatement from the NFL. Here's the part that is interesting to me today. And again, it's just one quote to one reporter before he went into the meeting today. Adrian Peterson told Josina Anderson of ESPN that he's ready to move on with his career. And here's the quote: I am anxious to start a new chapter and get on with the rest of my life. He added that he's eager to share what he and his family went through while he was out of football for a year, that at some point he will talk about it. So everybody's angling for that story. Peter King will be with us on Thursday. We have Peter on every week, and we'll have Peter on Thursday morning. I think it's 10:20. And I'm sure Peter's been working on this as well. The fact that he says, I'm anxious to start a new chapter and get on with the rest of my life. When you start a new chapter, you typically don't start it in the sports world in the same city. Am I right on that, E? Does that sound about right to you? Am I reaching here?
No,
or?
Nope, you're accurate.
So if he says, I'm anxious to start a new chapter, hence, get me the heck out of Minnesota and get on with the rest of my life, there comes a point. I could have stayed in San Diego. I was doing just fine. My wife was doing her job. I was doing my thing. We already had one son. But something told me I was wanting to get on to a new chapter in my life. I could have stayed at Channel 3. Instead, I decided to get on with a new chapter in my life. Eric, you could have stayed doing the radio stuff that you were doing. You get on with a new chapter in your life. You stay in the same city to do that. You're not being paid the amount of money that Adrian Peterson is. You're close, but not quite where Adrian Peterson is.
That's funny.
So the thing is, that reads to me like, please get me out of here. Now, I keep going back to Peter because Peter King is one of the most plugged-in people that I know in the NFL and one of the most respected voices. In his mock draft this last week, he had the Arizona Cardinals at number 24, looking at Todd Gurley, but he did write about the possibility of Adrian Peterson exists. So when somebody of that magnitude is putting that out there, he doesn't just throw stuff up against a wall and see if it sticks or not. Obviously, the Dallas Cowboy fans have sent to me over and over and over that Tony Romo's restructure equals the amount of money it would take to get Adrian Peterson in. Jacksonville's been thrown out there. The Raiders have been thrown out there for Adrian Peterson. A lot of names, a lot of potential storylines. I guess I'm just kind of done on Adrian Peterson from the standpoint of the off-the-field stuff. He made a mistake. In his mind, he didn't make a mistake from a parenting standpoint. So we've had the whole ethical debate of how to parent your kids. And did you see the pictures? And people telling me, well, that's how I was raised. And I ended up having some stuff done to me. And da, 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 da. That's just the culture I grew up in. Done with that. Adrian Peterson having a year off from football could be very fresh or could be a year older and it would show on his body. I think that's a very fair argument to bring up. I think it's pretty important for him to be in mini camps and OTAs and all that stuff this year to get right back into the mix. And from the Cardinals standpoint, the 24th overall pick, is that too high of a price tag for Adrian Peterson? Or what has been out there quite a bit is a second round pick is what it would take to get Adrian Peterson. Would a guy like Steve Keim be willing to do that? In my opinion, yes, he would. I would go a step further and say, if you have to give up your number one pick this year, the 24th overall pick, for Adrian Peterson, you are in a win-now mode. Carson Palmer is coming off of two big injuries. This isn't something that you can sit there and say, let's wait and develop. And I would much rather trade the 24th overall pick. That is not going to mortgage your future. Mortgaging your future is Wendell Bryant. Mortgaging your future is Andre Wadsworth. Mortgaging your future is Matt Leinart.
Chris Wells, the artist formerly known as Beanie.
Beanie Wells. Leland McElroy. Leonard Davis. That is mortgaging. Eric Swan. Mortgaging your future is going back through the years and seeing more often than not. I'm not going to say that's across the board. Levi Brown, mortgaging your future. Draft picks that were first-round picks and high first-round picks that didn't work out. The aptitude that Steve Keim and the staff of the Cardinals have shown in later rounds tells me I'm willing to part with a number one to get Adrian Peterson here. And I'd be fine with that. So he is meeting with Goodell today. He has talked to one reporter who says he's anxious to start a new chapter and get on with the rest of his life. Yeah, I'm hoping it's here. I'd be fine with that. To me, him going to Minnesota, do the Vikings have a better chance of winning than the Cardinals do? Well, Seattle's not in the division with the Vikings, so there's that. Green Bay is Green Bay. Green Bay doesn't go out and do the free agent stuff, if you notice. They just build from within. But they got an awful lot of offensive talent up there. But if it's beyond, and then, you know, that's the way it goes. There's a press conference today involving Ronde Hollis-Jefferson and Sean Miller. The fact that Sean Miller is at the press conference, I had a couple of people that said, well, if it's Sean Miller, then he's going to talk about what a tough decision it was and how thrilled he is to having Ronde come back. And I totally disagree with that. I think it's Ronde Hollis-Jefferson saying he's taking the next step, and it's Sean Miller saying, I support him, and it was great while he was here. Sean Miller is a smart guy. U of A is smart people. Your head coach is there supporting you going on to the next level. When it's the kid by themselves and there's no coach and nobody else there, remember when Jahi turned pro in the middle of summer? And it was like, what is this? And Herb was there and everybody's all happy. And then when it came time for him to go at the end of last year, we never saw anybody from ASU basketball around Jahi. It was like, please move on. We're done. Ronde Hollis-Jefferson, is he a finished project? Heck no. He's one of those that's got to develop a mid-range jump shot, in my humble opinion, watching him in the postseason. But there's no question he's athletically gifted. And in this current era of college basketball, get your clock ticking on your first NBA contract. And the only way you can do that is by turning pro. That's it. It would be nice if Hollis-Jefferson and Stanley Johnson came in today and sat there together and said, we're going to do this and just move on. But I don't think that's going to happen. I would be very surprised if he returned. I'd actually be pleasantly surprised. I think it would be very good for him to return for another year. But more often than not, we see kids that are a long ways away from a finished product, and they turn pro. And friends, that's why the NBA product in some markets sucks. See a bunch of guys that don't know how to play the game. They don't know what their right hand is for. They don't know the ins and outs of basketball, but they got to get their clock ticking to make money. It's unfortunate. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports.